Mr. K1 Blue Fine.
He doesn't look the usual Japanese, because he's slim, his face is longish. He may look pretty serious, but suddenly he will smile, and when he begins to talk, you will find that his voice and attitude are very friendly. That here is a man who can be a friend to you. And it's true. Later he became quite friendly with my family and me. In fact, when he was in Endau, he visited my family several times. And he has got the ability to mix with people and form friendships with local people. And local people are not afraid at all to go and consult and see him. Although he's a top man in his department, always there is an unending stream of people going to see him with the complaints and the woes. And he always tries his very best to accommodate them and help them in whatever way he could.
On that day of the meeting, was that the first time you have seen him and the first time with you?
Yes, it was the first time that I saw him. And I was so surprised that he was so interested in getting us to sing the songs and to get education of the young going. And he stressed the importance of the education of the young people, or importance of the schools. And which he actually did. Because every time later when he went to Endau, he did what he believed. School was to him the very important thing. And he was very fond of children. Music is something he likes very much. He likes music, he likes listening to music, he likes to hear music performed by people, especially his friends, He likes small gatherings. He doesn't like to big shows. He doesn't like to give speeches and such things. He likes to have small groups of people, close friends, and he can mix with people of great importance. He can mix with very humble people as also. He's a very good mixer. That's why I said my first impression was that he's a man who is a man of all people, you can say. I think they chose the right man to be a go-between the stern authority of the Japanese government and the people of Singapore. People of such a mixed lot like us. So Singapore was very fortunate to have him. Otherwise, things might have been worse. Things might have been far worse without him. And the people of Singapore, many of them, have got good reason to be grateful to him. I think my wife has got a certificate which says that he protects me because sort of this or that and so on.
Would you say that that first meeting between him and the senior staff from the various schools was a successful one?
Yeah, pardon?
Would you say that the first meeting between him and the senior staff of the various schools was a successful one?
Well, what?
Was a successful one.
I should think so, because there were no hitches that I could think of. During his relationship with education, I could not think of any hitches. The teachers whom he sent to take us in Japanese were very friendly, especially a man called Mr. Ishii, which in Japanese means Mr. Stone. He was very friendly, a great humorous joker. And made friends with us all and told us a lot about Japanese education and how Japanese people behaved and so on. And there was no trouble at all. He did help in creating an understanding in a short period, an understanding of the Japanese way of thinking. So while we studied a little bit of the Japanese language, we began to appreciate the thinking of the Japanese people. See? That although they were soldiers, they apparently were very cool. He was trying to be, he was not actually apologetic. He was trying to tell us or explain to us in a certain way why Japan had to do this kind of thing. That it was something quite inevitable. Quite inevitable. That such things are, and he felt sorry, he regretted many things. Not to say that he said everything was all right. And so we understood. And he appreciated a lot of Western things. And very strange, he appreciated a lot of Western songs like "Auld Lang Syne," "Merry Widow Waltz," "Strauss Waltzes," and so on. And at one time I was pretty good in the violin when before I got arthritis. He used to ask me to play "Blue Danube" and so on. See, whenever he came to my place, he said, "Please, Gisan, Blue Danube, huh?" And we formed a group to entertain him. So he did bring that atmosphere of good relationship. So his position as a welfare officer, welfare chief and education officer was really suitable and appropriate. And so I said it was fortunate. And many people in Singapore should be grateful and thankful that we have him. We had him.
When after that first meeting, you were given the task to collect the furniture, how long was it before the school? How long did all that take before the school actually started functioning?
Well, it took about a month, when we collected everything, and then the teachers together, and the teachers had to learn the Japanese alphabet and so on. And you had to work out the syllabus and register the names and so on. And set them in their classes by ages and all those things. But actually, it was the putting them back in the classes just before the war, and just sometimes a year above the previous class, and that sort of thing. It was really difficult. And some of the children missed their classes so badly. After the war, it was difficult to catch up with the normal English standard.
After the occupation, you mean?
After the occupation, I mean. Although some of them did pretty well, though.
So, during that 1 month, you were being taught the Japanese language as well?
Yes.
And you were also doing the registration of the students?
Yes. I don't know other schools what they did. I have no idea. It all depended on the individual initiative. There was no, as I said already, proper enforced system working together, synchronized system. Not like at present with computerization, that kind of thing. Everybody its own way. You're expected to do by a certain date, and you do it as best you can. There was no there were no inspectors, not enough inspectors. You're entrusted with a certain job, and so we sort of did it.
It was after that 1 month that the classes started for the students.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Did you have any assistance to help you to collect the tables and chairs from the other
I mean, some teachers will free Kim Long, I think. Kim Long to help. And you meet the people who took them, trundled them back. And the gardeners who were in the pay of the Ministry of Education, they helped to bring them back. They bring them back in a few at a time, and in carts, in trishaws, and so on.
With the registrations for the students
also? Some of the teachers, I don't know who they are, I can't remember. They're very old, they must have retired, and some of them passed away, and, or transferred to other places.
How long did it take your school to register the students for the classes?
Actually, not very long. Just they came, as you just, what class were you in, age, address, age, name, and I'll put them in sheets, and later we rearrange them in the in the sheets. Give the teacher one sheet each, and then they enter the register. As soon as they get the register, they get temporary postcap sheets first, you see, and for the first week or so, they use the temporary sheets until everything is settled down. Then they transfer onto the proper register.
Was the name of your school changed at all during that time?
No, same. It was Chung Guan English School.
How about
the
Kuo Chuan Girls School?
It was the same.
The teachers that went back to help you, were these teachers the same as before the war?
Most of them at that time. Most of them.
Were there any new teachers added to your staff?
No, I don't think. During the short span of time, I don't think there were any changes. During the short span of time, the same teachers came back.
What about the students?
Students, they were all the same, I think. More or less the same. I should think the numbers were fewer. There were not so many. Because some found it was not necessary to go to school to do black market business was better.
So, how did you make it known to the students that they could come back to the school?
Oh, this thing is not necessary. I mean, they some other would know. I suppose it was announced in the papers, or somehow they would tell each other by word of mouth. We had no record, all the old registers, don't know where they went to, they disappeared. Of course, we were supposed to keep them, we don't know where they were.
So, when did the school start functioning?
I've no definite idea of the date.
You mentioned that you studied the Japanese language before the school started functioning. Can you tell us more about those classes?
Oh, those classes were much easier for those who knew Chinese. It's quite obvious. And he started very slowly with the Japanese alphabets, and written in two forms, the katakana and hirakana, and then he began to form simple sentences for us to follow, like in a primary school. But that was of not much use because, you know, a study of language at a late age is not easy. We might be able to understand the thing slowly by translation, but when it comes to conversation in oral work, we are absolutely hopeless. So after teaching the children, we found that the children could narrate some of the Aesop's fables in Japanese better than the teachers themselves. I remember giving the students stories about the fox and the hare in Japanese. My goodness, they could stand up and repeat the whole story in Japanese, which left me with my mouth gaping wide. I couldn't do it, but they could, because they were young. Then we went on and on and on, and he frankly told us that to study Japanese up to elementary standard is not too difficult. One could do it intensively in about 6 months to a year, but to go further than that, it would take a lifetime. It would be very difficult because there's a lot to learn. It's the same with English. If one wants just to learn anything quickly, it will take to a few years as well. So we just learned as best we could. And strange as it seems, because it was a matter of bread and butter, many of the teachers managed to do it. And he gave a lot of friendly tests and quizzes. And it was a lot of laughter and humor when some teachers made mistakes, which caused him to laugh, caused us all to laugh, all in good humor.
The class was all filled up with teachers.
Yes. And he had quite a hard time because he had sometimes two or three classes in a day, or 1.5 hours each class to go on, and all the time he had to do the talking. And obviously he has been a trained teacher, he's good, yeah. And all the teachers have gone to go through a very drastic course, and it's quite a lesson for local teachers to learn from the way they teach. They do work hard. Of course, they must send their best. In such circumstances, they must send their best, because that is important that the scheme succeeds.
Where were the classes held?
At St. Joseph's Institution.
Was a class in the morning or in the afternoon?
Of course, in the afternoon. We all in the morning school. At that time, there were very few afternoon schools. The afternoon schools were all extended schools for those superannuated students, that is, for students who could not make the grade, those who were not so good.
But at that time, the schools had not started yet.
Started what?
When we were having our Japanese classes, the schools had not started functioning yet.
Started. At first, it was not, the schools had not started, but soon afterwards the school started.
So you had a few lessons before the school
yes,
started?
Yes.
And then you continue and
continued? Yes, continued. I don't know how many times a week, 3 times a week or so. I think about 3 times a week.
How many teachers were in each class?
About 30. 30 years, quite a big class.
Was Mr. Ishii the only teacher?
I think there was another one. I don't know, at night. I've never seen him or her. The more advanced one. For those who had Chinese, not good knowledge of Chinese.
Besides teaching all of you the Japanese characters and the language, did they teach you anything about the Japanese culture, history, and all?
No, they had no time. They did hint, and they took for granted that we could read them from our history books. He would say, sometimes he would interject and say, you know, he said, yeah, we know. And I said, yeah, you know, he said, we know. So, that kind of thing. His favorite, wakarimasuka, that kind of thing.
How was his attitude towards the student and the way he hurt?
Pardon?
Was he very serious in teaching all of you the language?
Yes, he was quite serious, but not condescending. He had respect for us, knowing very well that we are all teachers. Even when we made quite silly errors, he did not make fun of us. He did not make fun of us, because like all Japanese, they realize that when we start to learn anything, no matter how simple, we must start making mistakes. There's no such thing as mastering a thing in a day or two, or mastering a thing quickly. Nobody can do it. You always believe in starting with fundamentals.
What about the teacher's attitudes towards learning the Japanese language?
The teachers? Well, as I said, most of us regard it as a matter of livelihood. That in order to teach, you've got to learn the Japanese language. Otherwise, how could you carry on? On the timetable, there are periods where the Japanese language must be taught. The textbooks are there. The students are waiting for you to write the Japanese characters and for you to teach them. You cannot just sit down and do nothing. At least you must write something and pronounce the letters for them. Or read, you do understand, at least make the sounds for them to read or repeat. Must do something about it.
Was there any kind of examinations for the teachers?
Yes, I think so. But what happened to the exam papers? Whether they record the marks or not, I don't know. They do return the papers and say, so mark the mistakes, no marks, just mark the mistakes, he corrects all the mistakes and hand over to you. That's all. He never comments, he says, you look at this, make sure the mistakes, these are the mistakes. Right? Just like that. I don't think that, maybe he has got to make a report somewhere to Mr. Shinozaki, I don't know, but I suppose he has got to give tests as to all teachers' masters, and record that he has given the tests.
Was he a civilian or a military man?
He holds a military rank, a rank of lieutenant or so. Sometimes he comes in uniform, but usually the khaki trousers and a white shirt. I think he's in a military camp. I think he must belong to the army. Like an education officer of the army. So he travels with expense paid by the army, so he must belong to the army. I have no idea. I think I was in that class for quite a long time, you know. I finished no how many books. I went on and on and on, I don't know when. I have no idea actually, you know, we just went on automatically. We just went on and on, and we gave him some parties and so on, and he just went on, and more or less those were lessons, later became lessons in reading. You take out a book, you read, and the other chap will read, and you ask each other questions. Unfortunately, quite a number of those in my class have already passed away, because I'm already 69, most of them have my age have already said goodbye. They've gone, you know where. Left,
Did you enjoy all those lessons?
Pardon?
Did you enjoy all those lessons?
I don't say I quite enjoy, but it's something new. It's a sort of a challenge. And once you have studied something and begin to understand something, you find it's quite fascinating to to be able to understand. But now, for example, I listen to the Japanese speaker, I can understand a little bit. I feel quite pleased with myself. When other people don't understand, I can understand. Of course, I've been working with the Japanese for the last 9 years. I've been working with a Japanese school for the last 9 years. And there, I make no effort to learn, I learn. Because I work there as a secretary of the Japanese school here. And that kind of learning is quite different. That kind of learning is being in, surrounded by Japanese voices and Japanese people talking. Whether you like it or not, the words get stuck in the mind, say, without effort. It's quite enjoyable to be able to learn a new language. But then the usefulness is not so great. It's not of great use to me. But if it's useful to you, it can be very interesting.
How was the relationship among the teachers in the class?
Now, in times of adversity, it's very strange. The relationship is better. You find a closeness and a oneness which you cannot find nowadays. Nowadays, each person will take his car and drive away. But in those days, I have a car, I wait for you. You want the lift, I take you back. I take you to where you're going. Never mind, I wait for you. I say, you wait for me. Let's go together. People were more helpful towards each other during the Japanese occupation, because in times of common difficulty and facing common problems, people tend to unite and face these problems helping each other. Today,
those teachers were from various schools, or were all of them from your class, from your school?
No, far between, from ACS, from Raffles, far, all over Singapore. Some we never, you would have never seen each other. Yes. Should be coming in time.
How did all of you feel about being only a few lessons ahead of your students?
Oh, we at first felt funny, but then the students understood. Some other they knew, and they took it in with good humor. And furthermore, they knew that the main purpose in coming to school was to learn English. Some other they knew that it was not really to learn Japanese. They took Japanese as a second language that they had to study. They studied as a matter of interest. But the main thing was the studying of English, mastering of the present tense, the past tense, singular, plural, and that kind of thing. So they learned an extra language.